Tape 22, Side 2, House Labor Committee, Monday, March 30th. Public hearing, work session, Senate Bill 882, House Bill 2237, Senate Bill 297, and House Bill 2820.
We will come to order, the clerk will make those present, all of us are excused. The first bill I'm going to bring up today, and it's specifically the Representative Markey wants to put a bill on the agenda and have the opportunity for a number of people to come out and testify. That's where the House Bill 2020 Kiffin bill is here, so I'm going to start with them and open up the hearing on 2020. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm, for the record, I'm Representative Bill Markham from Douglas County. And I have here at the sub table with me at the moment Representative Chip Lombard from the Ashland Climate Falls area and Mr. Finch, who's legal counsel for the Oregon Log Truckers Association. Also, behind me, I have a number of independent owner-operator truckers. I have one or two people here who are in the sawmill business. Certainly the Oregon Log Truckers Association is here with Mr. McKellar. Chuck Gale of Safe is here, and let me very briefly run through my page and a half here. And before I get into it, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and I have copies here for all the committees which the clerk can pass out due time. Other members of the Oregon legislature that have indicated they definitely favor the bill and asked me to read into the record their name, and some of them would like to appear just for a few 30-second shot on this before we're through this morning. If I may, I'll just read the list of them, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wolfer, Magruder, Jones, Sam Johnson, Bill Grinnell, Marks, Van Fleet, Gilmore, Byers, Cecil Johnson, Rogers, Wilhelm, who sits there in front of me, as well as Mr. Representative Rogers, Max Simpson, Doc Stevenson, Representative Lombard, who's here at the table with us, Klein, Duff, Bugis, and Riebel, and two senators have already come over and indicated their interest in the bill, Senator Jernstead and Potts. Let me just give you a fast shot on the bill, if I may, Chairman and members of the committee. The bill would add to the exempt category of persons who currently do have to be covered by workmen's, who do not have to be covered by workmen's compensation insurance. Equipment owners who own and operate equipment for hire would not have to be covered by workmen's compensation insurance. The workers now exempt, non-subject, include domestic servants, gardeners, casuals, employees with federal coverage, city workers of cities over 200,000, meaning Portland, of course, religious charitable organization, employees working for the room and board, and this is where what we're aimed at, the sole proprietors, partners, and officers of corporations. Now, in the area of the historical background, if passed, the bill would alleviate a chronic problem affecting owner-operators, employers, workman compensation insurance companies, and the courts. For a long time, the courts, have had to settle on a case-by-case basis the question of whether owner-operators, such as log truckers, were workers or independent contractors. The courts have ruled that it didn't make any difference if the equipment operator were called an independent contractor. If the operator were injured and met the case law definition of a worker, the person or company for whom the person worked as an employer or as the operator an employee and eligible for benefits. This has created a situation where independent owners operating equipment for hire have found it difficult to secure a contract. Many employers with whom they might contract were reluctant to enter into an agreement which might later be declared to be an employer-employee relationship. In such cases, the employer must then pay back premiums and assume the additional claims cost. The problem can be solved by making such owner-operators of equipment for hire non-subject workers. As such, they could elect to cover themselves if they so desired. The employer with whom they have the contract could also elect to cover them under provisions which allow for coverage of non-subject workers. This would allow the status of the owner-operator to be determined at the time of the agreement rather than in costly court actions after the action has taken place. Mr. Chairman, this problem was brought to me. Of course, I've been in the business for many years in the wood products business, so I'm aware of it. But both independent log trucker owners in my county, as well as two different mills in my immediate area, came to me with this problem last fall, and so that's really the reason the bill was put together, and I think we have something here that should be explored to the fullest extent. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Kip Lombard from District 52. I just have a very short statement to make for the record on this matter, and then I do have another committee meeting. I am appearing in support of the bill. I'd like to just make basically two comments. Number one, it's always seemed rather anomalous to me how often we say to an individual that you are an independent businessman, but then we're going to protect you from your own foolishness. And it seems to me in this particular area, we've carved out, or at least historically we've attempted to carve out the sole proprietor, and then we proceed to erode that concept, and that leads into the second point that I'd like to make. And that's with regard to court interpretations of what we do here. When we legislate the parameters, we really don't always make it clear what our intentions are with regard to the specifics, and the courts, quite naturally, are left up to ascertain what our intent is. And where we can make our intent clearly known, I think we should do so. In the law today, the question, I think, to me in part has been who is a, quote, sole proprietor. The courts have not always done justice to this term. I feel that the interpretations that I think will be gone over by Mr. French later on have strained the common sense definition of this term, and it seems to me that the legislation that we're proposing today will get us back on track on what we've really intended, what's been intended in the past, with regards to this legislation. Thank you.
Are there any questions of either Representative Markham or Representative Lombard? Yes, or is it?
Markham, I guess, as you started first, but it doesn't make any difference. So you talked only about, if I remember right, about just about log truckers, and the amendments go much further than that. Are you speaking for people in other kinds of businesses too, or Kip, are you? Yes.
I
talked about hauling rock, sand, gravel, dirt, concrete, backhoe work, a tractor.
Well,
any other motor vehicle commonly operated for hire.
Well, Representative Starr, if I may, this, of course, you have the same situation, including these other people that you're referring to, B, C, D, and E. But I have amendments prepared that would take it back to only a motor vehicle used in transportation, logs, poles, and piling, if in fact the committee feels is too wide in scope.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, Representative Otto.
I have several questions, Bill. One is that if this bill were passed and that log truck driver were to have an accident and it's not covered under workman's comp, what sort of benefits would he have?
Well, even if we change the law to the extent that I'm proposing, in some cases it could still be wrapped through the court and they'd have to ultimately make the final determination, unfortunately. What we're trying to do in here is put in more teeth for the judge to look at and say, well, he is an independent operator, owner-operator. But back to the basic question you asked, if the man is capable of running his own business, which includes at least a $65,000 piece of equipment he's operating, and the time he gets his shop built and all his air and hydraulic equipment in there to maintain it. He's in $100,000. I think he's bright enough to buy health accident insurance to cover him, and of course that would be on a 24-hour basis. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I truly believe that, and he'd have that volition, which he's denied today.
All right, then the next question I have, under workman's comp or any program, I assume the end cost would be borne by the consumer, right? And these would be costs that could be passed on to the consumer.
Oh, yeah. In everything, I might add. Yeah,
right.
You're right. Everything.
All right, then the next question on page 2, line 31. Any person or persons operating as partners who have an ownership or leasehold interest in equipment and are engaged in the business of operating such equipment for hire. Now, you know as well as I do that there's always people that are attempting to evade the law and the intent of the law. Now, would it be possible for an employer and an employee to enter into an arrangement whereby the employee was given, say, 1/50th of an interest in this piece of equipment, and then we could call that person a partner, and that person then would not be eligible for workman's comp benefits?
I would assume that would be possible. I would assume he'd have to buy that 1/50th, but I'm not. That's a difficult question for me to answer, Glenn.
Right. Would you be adverse to amendments to the bill that would say that the owner-operator would have to have more than or at least a 50% ownership?
I don't see anything wrong with that. Personally, we're going to have some reactions, hopefully from people sitting behind me who are in the business. But I get the point you're making. I think it's a point well taken. Mr. French might like to, may my mouthpiece respond to you, Representative Otto.
Representative Otto, I think
Mr.
that...
Mr. French, would you put your name, if you're going to start testifying, would you put your name on the record so we can pick it up on the tape at that point?
I believe I have it over there, but...
Read it.
Pardon me. Joe French, representing Oregon Log Truckers Association, P.O. Box 2167, Salem, Oregon. I believe Representative Otto, in answer to your question of the 1/50th, I think it would be similar to when a person forms a corporation with the main purpose to avoid creditors, that if the corporation contracts and makes a lot of bills, the court would pierce the corporate veil saying that was made just to get around the law. And I think the 1/50th example, I'm sure that the court, if that case was litigated as a workman's comp case, I think perhaps the intent would be shown that it was merely to circumvent the law and would not be upheld. That would be my reaction to that.
I can appreciate that, but I also think that you can appreciate it that we don't want to bring about unnecessary lawsuits.
No, I agree with that.
And what would your reaction be to...
I would not see anything wrong with that.
With a 50%, at least 50% ownership.
Representative Otto, I might add that the only question I would have in this is, of course, that there are legitimate partnerships that involve more than two people.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a question of where we draw the line or where we make a de minimis argument, because you could have three or four people involved in the ownership, for instance, of a vehicle, particularly a vehicle as expensive as a logging truck, and you may have one active owner-operator and the other passive partners for financial purposes, and I'd hate to see you negate that kind of an arrangement is the only thing. And I don't know where you draw the line, but I think that is a problem that you should consider if you're going to talk about setting certain minimums.
If I may, Representative Otto, in reflecting on your question, I can think of instances where there's a father and two sons right in my backyard that have a numerous log trucks, as a matter of fact, and I can think of another operation where there's four of them involved. I think something around 20% may be more practical, but we'll hear from people that are right on the firing line a little later.
Representative Wilhelm.
Bill, we in this committee, as you well know, deal with a lot of requests regarding workman's compensation, unemployment insurance, and the exemptions of certain employees or employer groups, and the inclusion of others, et cetera, et cetera. The problems generally are divided equally, I think, between the workman's compensation and unemployment insurance. Do you feel that the group you're speaking in behalf of, and that I am later going to speak in behalf of here this morning, would also have the same attitude towards unemployment insurance? That is, would they also like to be excluded from the unemployment insurance law the same as they want to be excluded from the workman's compensation law?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilhelm, they already are excluded from unemployment.
The owner-operator never draw unemployment insurance.
Under 657-047.
Gary, that was the, when you and I met this last week and we talked about that, that's the statute that excludes them, and that was the one. Remember, at that time, I said that with the bill, it may be better to pick up a statute like that and apply it to this and do it the way we're doing it.
Employment is mandatory. Employment transportation log stores and pilot excluded one of those years in this chapter. Employment does not include transportation of motor vehicle of log stores and pilot or any person who both services and maintains a vehicle used in such transportation. This thing is mandatory. I'm going to put that in my bill, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I want the record to be so clear, though, that these people that you're speaking on behalf of here,
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate both of you.
Mr. Ron Bauer.
I'm Ron Bauer. I live at 1631 Clark Avenue in Cottage Grove. The bill we're talking about here, I feel that we should have the option to either say yes or no. Myself, and I think I probably speak for the majority of them, we all carry, well, I shouldn't eliminate all, but most of us carry a private insurance to cover our families. Now, to get this to cover our families, we have to cover ourselves first. So the majority of us are already carrying an insurance. At times, I've hired people to drive my truck. When my wife was having a baby, I was off for 3 days. I hired a guy to drive my truck. I worked for, in the last 6 months, about 7 different lawyers that I contract all for. Are there any questions you'd like
to ask? The option that you're talking about, you're just saying if you would rather have the owner operator to have the option to have the person contracting your supplier or you supplier?
Myself.
Okay.
And this is what we're talking about here, as I understand it. If it's going to be required of me to have it to haul a job, then I'd like to have the option to say, no, I don't want to work for you. Or at least have the option where I can say, yes, I want to carry this state investment.
Okay.
Thank you,
Ron.
Thank you.
This is Marlon Cox.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marlon Cox. I represent Cindy Long Country Riddle, a logging and sawmill business and pouring company here in 70 people. I have worked for Cindy Long for 30 years this year. We support House Bill 2820 and this by Representative Markham. In fact, we were probably instrumental in the bill being written in the first place. I recognized problems earlier for many years. Cindy has always been partial to hiring young guys in the log trucking business because we've always taken the position that it is desirable for a little man to integrate him for himself and his own business. There has always been a handicap to see it due to the fact that the owner driver cannot declare himself an independent contractor as he relates to workman's compensation due primarily to a ruling made in court 3 years ago identified as the Bowser case. We have never understood the reasoning behind the ruling. A lawyer employing one or more persons is not required to insure himself on the workman's comp. It has always been impossible for senior police, log truckers, and jail crew to pick up a load at the land each of the year long and the immediate employer was out. Also, there are other factors making it difficult due to the people involved. It then becomes our responsibility to determine whether or not they are insured so that we should pick up their coverage and be subject upon audit to pay premium upon them. Obviously, we cannot pay insurance coverage on any drivers and not on fleet owners and pay the same hauling rate. That would be discriminatory. The increased cost of workers' compensation insurance for many drivers may very well force them to quit business for themselves if we cannot resolve the problem they are facing. We believe they should have the right to declare themselves independent contractors, haul for whoever they wish, and carry the insurance for their use with the coverage they wish. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. I have a couple more representatives here that want to get on the record, so I'm going to call them up. They're going to be very quick. Representative Byers and Representative Bibbs. Where's Ted go? Want to get in for me? Go ahead, bud.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The record on State Representative Bud Byers, District 37, which includes
has a lot of contract logins on. We have, in fact, the number of signatures probably as many as any district in the state. We haulers and owner operators are concerned about the continual improvement of them as free enterprise businessmen, and they certainly are in support of this legislation, as am I. And I'm going to be very brief because I know a lot of people here who want to tell a story, but I wanted to lend my support to House Bill 2820. And I regret that I didn't get a chance to get my name on it because this is it is important to our people. And we're not talking just, as I understand, we're talking about construction people. We have a lot of people who are in the union operated of their own equipment who are concerned about this.
Mr. Bias, I think the representative Markham would be willing that if the bill comes out of the committee to have a period of which other people could sign on to the bill in co-sponsor. Was it you, Representative Markham?
I do believe, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Markham. Go ahead. Everything you do,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ted Burgess, representative from District Number 2. And as you may have noticed, I read right next door to Representative Markham, and so I'm the second signer of the bill. And however, he didn't have to twist any arms in my case. Probably second only to interest in general overhaul or revision of the workman's comp coverage. The loggers have set me on this problem with correspondence and telephone calls. And I would like very much to see some kind of consideration given to the independent truck owner and driver. And this bill is the type of thing I believe that they tell me they need very badly, and I would like to urge for favorable consideration by the committee.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Michael Quandio.
My name is Mike Quadis. I'm from Clarence Falls.
Could you spell your last name, sir?
Quadis, Quadros.
Thank you, sir.
I'd just like to say, in our case around Klamath, we have to compete with the Californians on the log hauling end of it. And their rate is $17.50 per hundred, where ours is $32 per hundred. And it just makes it a little tougher to compete with some of these guys that are coming into our area. And when I first started hauling, I was carrying my own insurance, carrying MSB there in Klamath Falls. And they have full-time, 24-hour coverage. It's about the best health insurance you can get in that area that I found. Plus, I had a disability policy that covered me day and night. And I paid $30 per month on my CMSD, and my disability was only around $250 per year. And of course, when I tried to find a job in that area, that's the first thing I asked if you pay a state comp. And I told them no, but I have my own insurance. Well, they say, first thing they tell you is that your insurance has to be comparable to state comp, which I found out that mine wasn't, so I wound up going down to state comp and canceling my other insurance. But it just kind of works a hardship on an independent operator, and I think if they could get the thing changed, they should be able to help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Mayer, M-A-I-E-R. with the insurance brokerage firm of FedEx Games and Company. Our firm is broker and consultant to the Oregon Log Truckers Association. Just want to make the committee aware of the fact that should this bill be passed, that there are group insurance programs available through the Log Truckers Association, which, while they do not duplicate workers' compensation benefits, do provide very adequate coverage both for medical benefits, death benefits, and disability income benefits. I could give you some details of this program if anybody's interested, but...
I would like to read from Portland.
Yeah.
Okay. There are a number of people here that are going to testify. What I'd like to do is a bill appears to just Representative Otterford, and he's going to have some amendments. What I'd like to do is be able to have you available at a later time when it's up for work session to come back and describe the benefits that are applicable. Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Gary Putnam?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gary Putnam, Klamath Falls, and along with Mike, we've experienced it in our area with the California trucks coming in. Their compensation rates cheaper than ours. We find that it's hard to compete against them. If this bill does go through, it would relieve a burden on us, where several of us in this area have bought new trucks with a high price of the trucks, the prices of our parts, and fuel spiraling, and now our compensation going up. We feel that we can no longer afford to have it, but yet we can no longer afford not to have it. And if we could have it where we could elect to carry our own insurance, it would sure be a better help to us and benefit.
Thank you, Jeff. Mr. Bernie Johnson?
I'm Bernie Johnson, Klamath Falls, Oregon, and also an independent operator. And I'd just like to say to any of Gary and Mary Kay that I feel that with the workers' compensation and everything is kind of competing in LA, you know, like they said, with the California trucks. And also, there's most of all of us that bought new trucks up there, and we've got truck payments and stuff like that. It's also going on with the program, and I feel like with the gentleman that was sitting on the right over here, when the meeting first got going, that we all have, most of us have got sense enough that if we're driving a $40,000 or $50,000 rig, hauling logs, and got a shop and a bunch of tools and everything, that we've got sense enough to go out and take an insurance policy out on our own that will cover, our family if we happen to pass off in an accident or something like that. And myself, I also do have one on the side workers' comp, and I have had to need it. And I always will have it, because I feel that if I do pass off, my family is, you know, sitting in the behind. As it is right now with haul rates and everything going about, and fuel and paint and parts and tires and everything, working school is kind of getting out of our range of being able to afford it. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, my name is W.J. Hamilton. I'm also from Klamath Falls, and I'm in favor of this bill for the same reason that these other fellows from Klamath Falls have been up here and talked about. I carry my own insurance program. I have to carry my own insurance in order to protect my wife and myself. and I also carry disability insurance. So I feel that I'm adequately insured. I carry good life insurance policies, and I think I'm adequately insured to cover what I have in this world. And I think I should have an option as to whether I want to carry state comp or not. I believe this is a good bill, and I believe it's one that we really need, and I think that the representation that we have up here from our part of the state this morning, I think we have 11 or 12 people here, and I think that it really shows that they're really interested in this. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Please go right ahead, sir.
Mr. Hammond, we were about the rates. Now, we were at 3,450 per 100.
Well, that's close enough.
13,
I believe it is.
We do a lot of work down here, but sometimes we don't equate that to how much it is in a year's time. Could you tell me about how much an average owner-operator would pay in premiums at $32 a hundred for even over a year's time?
Well, at the rate as it is right now, over the period of a year, on a 10-month average work year, I would say 10 months would be a good average in our area. Some folks work longer than that, some folks work 12 months. But on a 10-month average, the rate right now would be about a little better than $2,800 a year.
Thank you.
That's an average what you're paying now.
Yes, about $280 a month, I believe it is right now. And so on a 10-month average, that would be around
$2,800. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
Is it Mr. Ramsey? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Wayne Manzer from Klamath Falls. That's against the same as the...
Chairman, could you spell your name, please?
W-O-N-S-E-R.
Thank you.
I'm up against the same thing as the rest of the truckers in that area. And along with that, I have to carry dual coverage to cover my family and myself. And I can buy the other insurance for about half the price. So I just don't see the state comp. That's about all I got. Thank you.
Mr. Hunter, how many trucks do you have?
One.
One? Okay. Thank you.
Your insurance, you get comparable coverage?
Yes. Better.
Better coverage? Well, can you tell me why what the difference is in coverage between what the California operators that are kind of moving, and I think this Mike Quadra said they were moving into the area because they had that advantage. Any difference in benefits as far as you know that they get?
Yes, sir, I don't know any benefit.
Do you think that there are any, or you just aren't aware of any?
Well, I'd say it's probably comparable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Is it Gene Udell? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. In the name of Coon Gosky, I shouldn't be raising. If you were there with me, I'll go with you.
My name is Jim Riddickson, RUDRSIWL, and I'm from Estacada. I own one log truck and operate it. All over the state, but generally in the Clackamas Mountain area. I'm permitted to haul logs by the PUC in 23 counties, in or out of. And I feel, as an owner-operator of my own business, that I should not be required by a law to cover myself with insurance when I can buy other policies that are paying me pretty well the same, maybe a little bit less, but adequately. I have coverage, dual coverage, because I've bought disability insurance, I've bought medical insurance through a trucker's organization, so that my family is covered, and now we have a chance to support a bill that will give us the right to elect whether or not we want to cover ourselves with workman's comp. And I feel that we should have this right.
Thank you very much, sir. Any questions? Thank you. Mr. McDonald?
I'm McDonald, Klamath Falls, and as a one truck operator, I also feel that we should have the right to either go with the state compensation or to seek out a more competitive company and go with this company. And as contract haulers, we are in a position that we have to be competitive with the rest of the industry. And as it stands today, state compensation in the insurance business is not competitive. If we're to maintain a competitive status in our business, we should be able to seek out an insurance company that is competitive rate-wise and go with a company of our choice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Is it Mr. Dale Flynn? From Suburban Civil Falls High.
I'm Bill Hunt. I have one truck, and I'm in favor of this bill because I do not believe we can survive the way that things are going now.
You need to see. That's all I
need. H-U-N-T.
Okay. Thank you. Hunt. Mr. Stone?
Which one?
Lincoln? I really want to hear the testify on a couple on another bill.
That's on a very good.
Okay. I'm Vincent Stone, State and Oregon and one truck operator, and I agree 100% with the first statements that were made here this morning. I think we've got to have this thing to survive. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Mr. Lincoln?
My name is Robert Lukens from Midland, Klamath Falls. I'm a one truck operator, and in our area, I'm not too sure about the rest of the state, but I know for a fact we operate on a very small profit margin, and with workman's compensation, there isn't any profit left, and I'd like to see us move on to an area where we can pick and choose and go shopping for our own insurance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Sadler?
Which one?
Paul.
Paul Sager. I'm a small food operator, owner-operator from Baker, Oregon. Being a food operator, it's necessary that I carry with my comp on my employees. Being an owner-operator and driving probably 90% of the time, working in the shop and having other responsibilities, I feel that I should have a choice in the insurance that I choose for myself. Like many of the others here, I would prefer a health and accident policy, which would cover my family and still give me adequate protection with the other policies that I covered at the time, and allowing me to make the choice on my own personal action regarding workman's comp. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, go ahead, Bill.
I'd like to ask Mr. Chairman a question.
I understood that if you had employees, that then you did not have to cover yourself.
Yeah, my understanding is that being an owner-operator, I have the election, the personal election that I can do myself. However, when I'm behind the wheel and working on a job, the law really requires that I do carry it. Because if I don't, then he is obligated to pay a premium on me. The problem that's involved in the past, in cases like this, where an independent owner-operator or someone like myself did not cover him, the logger is prone to do it, but since he doesn't pay your wage, if he does, he'll withhold the premium on the full gross amount of the trucker, which forces us then to have personal coverage.
Mr. Chairman, I either have a misunderstanding of how this operates, or the logger or Mr. Sagner does, because my understanding was that if you are in fact have other employees working for you, you can still work yourself and not have to have the coverage.
Well, one of the trucks here, and one of my just one. I'll write the question down, and as soon as these other people come, they'll be here, and he can answer that question for us. Okay?
Yeah.
You
indicated that you were a state officer. Do any of your employees have a vested interest in these vehicles?
No, I'm a sole proprietor.
How many units do you operate?
5 units.
Do you feel that if we were to take this bill and say that you could get your insurance elsewhere, but not allow you the right to participate in the state program, do you think that would be equitable or not? What I'm really saying is, would you want to exclude state or have that as an option?
For myself, you mean?
Yeah.
So, yes, I would rather have the option. In fact, I would exclude SAFE because, or any workman's comp program. I would simply take a good health and accident policy with disability benefits. I have revenue income generated from the fact that I have a fleet operation. There isn't inequity here because, as a businessman, owner operator, I'm not eligible for unemployment compensation, but nonetheless, I'm considered an employee and must therefore pay a workman's comp premium.
But you wouldn't want the bill to end up saying that you were excluded from
the state. I think that we should all have the choice. Personally, I would take what I would feel an adequate health and accident policy, personal, but I think the option should be there for those that feel they may want the extra coverage that workman's comp could provide.
There's another bill in the legislature that is moving to exempt certain employees from the coverage of workers' compensation. That's what you're asking. But what the bill is going to do is going to require that the employer maintain a minimum level of health and medical benefits for their people. Would you be agreeable to something of that nature? In other words, that you would have to statutorily, the only way that you would be able to opt out the number of the workers' comp is that you would have to show that you have a certain level of medical and health benefits for yourself.
Would that apply to me personally or my employees?
Well, just you. I'm not talking about the state operation now. I'm just talking about you individually.
In other words, I would be required to have an insurance that maybe have some lesser limits than workman's comp. Yes, I would accept that because that's the area or the way that I would go anyway. I feel I need some insurance.
It's the type of problem that probably 95% of the people in this situation, it's a fleet operation, but it's an owner-operator, would probably, if they were able to have insurance, there'd be no doubt that they would, because you've got too big an investment. But the state has to look at the 5% that are not going to do that,
And we're going to do it this year as a cost saving. And we have to have some concern about what's going to happen to them. And by this minimum level of benefits, at least the state is sure that the people are going to be covered by some medical and health program and not be forced to go into public assistance or something if they're injured.
Well, I think that would answer a great deal of problems if there were a more minimum level, you know. We're almost done with workman's comp, and we know it's been happening in the legislature, the pros and cons, and the increased benefits, and it continues to cost. It was a question you asked earlier about the fact that, these costs, the increased cost of operation can be passed on to the consumer. That's probably more difficult in our area than in many, because we're dealing with many people on the way to our revenue. We're dealing with loggers and mills, and it's difficult for us to pass on the costs because we have to get an increase from a logger, we have to in turn get an increase from a mill of some sort. They can be passed on, but it's a very slow process. We cannot pass on the increases as rapidly as we need to.
Thank you very much.
Do you have any competition from Idaho or you?
No, we haven't. We're not really isolated over there, basically. We have one mill, but no, we haven't had any Idaho competition.
Thank you, Bill. Go ahead.
To follow up this particular question, there must be some areas of the state that does have competition from Idaho and Washington. Are you aware of this situation?
No, I'm not. We have had Idaho trucks in part of our haul area, but in the cases that have been there for logs that are going into Idaho, we have not had any actual local competition.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mm-hmm. Mr. Good?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Curtis Good from Baker, Oregon. I am a one-truck owner-operator, and I am in favor of this bill. I know for a fact in our area over there, there have been several owner-operators that have gone out of business. You see them every month, you see the transfers coming through the PUC office where guys have sold out, and I do believe that this state comp is one of the big things that is forcing individuals like myself out of business because it's just getting plumb out of reach. And there's, like everybody has stated, there's just so much other insurances that you can take out to cover yourself and our families. But it's much cheaper than what this state comp is. It's just plumb out of reason. That's all.
Do you provide your own coverage at this time?
I have got my own coverage on my that I have to carry for myself to cover my family, yes.
You don't have an employer's number with the state asset insurance fund now. Have you ever insured free workman's comp yourself? Let me ask you that.
Yeah. I couldn't operate over there without it because we have to have a certificate. The logger that I worked for last year, I had to provide him with a certificate showing that I was covered by state. Without it, you won't even get in the woods.
Is the 3213.
Says it's out around $278.56 a month.
Mr. Kim?
Yes, sir.
You also have a private health plan that covers you and your family.
Right.
Now, do you know if you are injured on the job, right now, since you're covered by workman's comp, will your private carrier also pay?
Well, I can't answer that truthfully because I really, you know, I've never been injured on the job. Okay. I've never had a claim with any of the insurance.
So the answer would be no.
as far as I know.
Yeah. Because most private or group plans have an exclusion for any kind of workman's comp.
Usually, if you've got one insurance, the other one won't cover.
But if you were not covered by workman's comp,
it would cover me.
Right.
What is, if I may ask, your monthly plan on your family medical plan?
It runs me 80, I believe it was $84. That's for myself, my wife, and two children. And that's
covered
24 hours a day.
So you're averaging about $360-some a month for both yourself and your family.
Right.
Okay.
With the other costs going up, it's really hard to put up with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Good. Mr. Green? Just a second, Mr. Green, why don't you sit down right there before you start talking? You've got another representative here. Why don't you sit down next to you? Go ahead, just sit right down there. Stay right there. Let's just get the chance first and you can follow up after him, if that's okay. Go ahead, Doc.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I probably have nearly as many log, small, independent, one-man log truck operators in my district as anybody in the state. And this is a bill I'm sponsoring on this bill because of the problems they're having. They're just being forced out of business because of the high cost. And you heard testimony on the cost of the industrial accident. We think this is a good bill. It'll give them a chance to be competitive and continue to operate and perhaps make enough money so they at least earn wages instead of being forced out of the business. We urge your support.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm Dale Green from Springfield, Oregon. And really, my biggest gripe on this is what happened to our American rights. And what I mean by this is all involved here is us and our family. Why should we be forced to carry something that's a 10-hour base coverage when we can get the same thing basically on a 24-hour coverage? And the state is costing us just about twice as much as what this other private insurance costs.
Is there any other questions?
No.
Go ahead. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm through.
Okay, go ahead.
The question that would come to my mind was prompted by comments by Representative Rogers. In other words, your private insurance is not covering you now for on-the-job accidents. And if you were to drop state comp, I would assume that those rates, with all those premium rates, would also go up on private insurance.
Well, my private insurance right now covers me 24 hours a day, on the job or off the job. It just depends on whether the state steps in and takes over or what.
But the point I'm trying to make is that your private insurance company assumes that the state is going to be in there to take over if you are injured on the job. Therefore, your rates are probably much lower than they would be if the private insurer knew that you had it. They had to go ahead and pick up that coverage.
The way I understand it, on the state industrial, the only way that I'll gain is safe is in case I lose, say, a limb or something like this. Then state will possibly give me a little bit more overhead than what my private insurance will. But with the difference in the rate on this here and what we got on the private insurance, it just isn't in the book. And it's just really just shoving it right down our throat. And I think as a private individual, a guy should be entitled to make that decision, whether he wants it or whether he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's just what I've got to say.
Mr. Green, I think it's probably the major advantage that you would have if you would consider an advantage with being covered by the
state workers' compensation law is not a cost factor in that sense. It's the fact that I think the major problem is if you're injured, you lost a limb, they have a vocational rehabilitation program. And I doubt if you're private carrier, any coverage you're going to get is going to fund you through a vocational rehabilitation program, which the state law does, if in fact you are injured and you qualify for it. And if it takes you 3 or 4 years to be retrained or whatever it takes, they will supply that program for you.
Well, this is true, but I still maintain, as an American citizen, we should have that right to decide whether we do or don't carry it.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Gregory. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to Representative Otto's question. Now, the rate will not increase. The rate is fixed, because it's based on a 24-hour coverage, even though there is an exclusion for a workman's comp, any claim that would be paid by a government program. But the rates for the private plan will not increase.
Can you put that in writing, Rob?
Yes, sir.
The other question I have is, Mr. Chairman, on line 4, all workmen are subject to ORS such and such, except those non-subject workmen described in the following subsections. If this bill were to pass, would it mean that these log truck drivers would be excluded from the workman's comp program, or would it be optional? They could elect to come under workman's comp or under a private insurer.
They would be completely opted out from the coverage, and there would be no option at all. It would just be a burnout subject workman.
In other words, if this bill were to pass, they would not have the option of workman's comp.
No, that's not correct, because there is another section of the law, if I can. If there are. Yes, 656-140, that begins any person or persons operating as partners, okay, and it goes on to say that they may independently on their own opt in under the law if they want, but there is no legal requirement for them to do that.
Okay, so it would be optional on their part.
Yes, they could do that. I read that the other night. Mr. Perkins? Mr. Sagan? If you bring the bill right here, you know the question I asked you about establishing minimum coverage. I got one down here. I heard get a copy of that bill for you. If you look at that and see the way that they're approaching this problem in another industry, and you'll get what I was getting at with your question. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, my name is Wes Perkins, and I'm from Creswell, Oregon. And I'm an independent owner-operator. I'm darn proud of it. I wouldn't be interested in being an employee, and as far as I'm concerned, except for this one particular law of this state industrial, this workman's comp, that I am an independent trucker. I haul for whom I want and where I want within my authority. I go where I can make the best living for myself. I am tied to nobody in a contract. I operate solely for myself, and I'm in favor of this bill. And I think I have the right to choose who and where I want to buy my insurance. I'm paying $280 a month. I know that I can take that $280 a month and spend it and go a lot further with it and still have money in my pocket. And I feel I don't have no use for unemployment insurance. I make my living this way. I don't want no part of nothing. So I figured that since I'm independent everywhere else, that I should be able to buy my insurance where I want.
Thank you.
Mr. Perkins, where do you live, Creswell? I live on Montauk Road between Cottage Grove and Creswell. I have a Cottage Grove phone number with a Creswell on
it. I was just trying to establish whether you're his constituent of mine.
You're not.
Well, you see, I do. What he's trying to say
I have a question.
Yes,
from the chair owner operator, and the few steps you could hire someone else to take over. Right?
That's correct.
Well, my concern is this, if you're not under safe, and you are sick, you hire someone else to drive your truck for you, then you probably hate to fill out forms as much as I do. I'm concerned about the person that you would hire. Would you?
Well, that's really all about law, of course.
But I also know the law can be evaded.
Yeah, that's true. But I think myself and my fellow members here try to abide by the law to the utmost, and I would not jeopardize myself or my family or anybody else that I would trust with my equipment to send them out on the job without coverage. No, I definitely would comply with the law there and send state accident anytime that is on my equipment, because it wouldn't only be their mess, it would be mine for sure.
Well, that's another question, and you're probably not the one to answer, maybe Chuck will. And that would be that, say that you're going for a period of a year or 2 years, and you're operating your own vehicle, and you wanted to take a vacation, or you were ill or injured or something, then you'd go under workman's comp. And my question, I guess, to Chuck Gale or someone more familiar with workman's comp than I am, would there be any waiting period before that employee that you hired to take your place would have to wait before he could legally drive your equipment?
There is not a fifth term representative.
Okay.
We have that option on our coverage.
Yeah.
We are a member as an employee, not an employee. The way the law is now, we are in fact an employee in our own business.
Now, I realize that, but I'm just wondering if you were to go to another insurer, would there be any time lag between the time you could legally hire an employee?
No, at this time, there is not. That is an option on our coverage.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's people in the audience who could answer that, too.
Thank you very much.
Jared, go ahead. Suddenly, like on Sunday, you discover that you got sick and you're not going to be able to work on Monday, so you call up some person that you got in the range with that's offered to work for you and probably has in the past. Is he covered then Monday as an employee?
Definitely. He would not go out on my equipment without being covered. I have a lot of money in my whole life invested in this business, and I'm not going to risk my business, you know, for a day's worth, for sure, or a week's worth. The man definitely would not go out on my equipment without being covered, and I don't think he would.
It can trigger instantly, is that correct?
Yes, I'm sure it does. I'm positive of it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Warner.
Is it Ed Spencer, Spinner?
I'm Ed Spinner, State Morgan, owner-operator. I'm in favor of this bill. But if we don't get something changed here, the owner-operator is going to go down the tube.
You only have one truck?
One truck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spencer. Mr. Dale Dunlap?
I'm Dale Grunwald. I'm from Hillsboro, Oregon. I'd like to talk a little bit about things that haven't been talked about here before. Yeah. I have a self-loader. First of all, I'd like to say I support this bill 100%. I have a self-loader, and I haul for a lot of small contractors, even people like you that might have as much as one tree in your backyard. And it would be for your protection to pass this bill, because you're responsible for me. Without having the way it is now, you're responsible for me. And I think most people don't realize that, being that they think they automatically assume that I am that I've taken care of all that, but I haven't. I've been in business for 17 years, and so far there's only been one guy that I can take away of these small operators that realized that he was to cover me when I went on his job, and that's in 17 years. There are some of the larger contractors that they obviously realize that. I do carry my own insurance, and it does cover me 24 hours a day and on the job, because I have been hurt on the job and I've tested that part of it. In regard to the question you asked Paul Sager on restrictions as to the amount of private insurance you have, I would be completely against that, because you're just getting back into the same situation you're in right now, that where they require the state accident for, especially on these larger jobs. Any questions?
Thank you very much, sir, Mr. Stromwell.
Yeah, I got a question.
Yes, go ahead.
You said you contract with several different producers, operators?
Right. I have a self-loading log truck.
Yeah, I understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, well, others have mentioned that they've got a license and can operate in a number of counties. And I was kind of curious as to how the jobs were developed. Are they put up for bid and you bid on them, or do you?
No. In the larger jobs, they probably are. But in the smaller jobs, where a farmer goes out and cuts his woodlot and that, he just knows that I've been in business for years. He calls me and he says, "Hey, I got some logs here, come and haul them when you can." And that's the way I do it. And then I send him, usually I set the, after they're hauled, I tell him how much it's going to be.
And under those circumstances, then he is liable for any injuries that he might
I do not have insurance with the state on myself.
And do you ask them if they have that protection?
No, because I have taken care of that through a private insurance policy, just like everybody is proposing to do here now.
Okay, thanks.
So, Mr. Rumble, thing you're saying that you don't haul for anyone who requires that you have your own certificate?
No. It appears to me from the testimony there that it's treated differently in different parts of the state. It's obvious that over in Eastern Oregon they require that employer's number.
They do here, where I'm from too, if you were working for a larger company.
But I'm working for these small contractors. They have no idea that I'm not in. Take care of my own affairs, you know, that they
cannot take care of your own coverage.
Right. Or with the state. Yeah. They don't realize that they're responsible for it either. Yeah.
I'm confused. You don't care any kind of workers' compensation coverage?
Not.
Under the state law?
No.
How do you escape?
I guess that'd be simple. I don't work for people that they're just small contractors. I don't really know how to tell you that.
That's
the way it is.
Under the present law, you're not required to do it.
And the present law, the employer, the
responsibility.
I tried to tell you if you hired me to come and haul your tree out of your backyard, you're responsible for me the way it is. But most people don't realize that.
and it would be a benefit to the public to change this, because they're the ones that are responsible, the ones that I haul for right now, these small contractors.
But you are an owner-operator. Oh,
definitely.
You know, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, but there's some problem here. Mr. Gill on the agenda?
Yeah, if the compliance division of the board comes out looking for who is not paying the insurance, they're never going to see Mr. Zumwalt. They're going to go look for the guy who's employed him, and they're never going to talk to him. And
but he's an owner-operator.
Yeah, but under the law, that he's not the one that's responsible for paying the coverage. The lawyer is, or the mill, is the one that is responsible. And what happens is these people contracted him, the lawyer or the mill operator, only thinks that Mr. Zumwalt's carrying the coverage, and no one said anything until someone files a claim. And that's where the whole process starts, because if he files a claim with the board, what happens is that they come in and they see who he's been employed by, and even though Mr. Zumwalt says, I'm an independent owner-operator, the board says, no, it doesn't help.
And I will claim because I have this private income.
I understand that. But then the only difference, you're saying, between Mr. Zumwalt and any of the regular log truck drivers that we've heard from up to this point is that the other log truck drivers are denied the opportunity to work until they produce a certificate.
Right.
So it's not the law that forced them, it's the people at the home place.
That's right.
Is that what you said?
That's exactly what's happening.
I'd like to pursue that a little further.
Okay, Chuck's going to be here, and it always gets the guys up to like yourself that always has to answer all the questions for everybody else. I think you're just as well.
I'm just going to make a comment. I appreciate you bringing up a point that I hadn't considered before, with the liability of the individual who uses your services, because I hadn't looked at that from that particular aspect. I appreciate that.
Mr. Is it Howard Lincoln? You must be the brother of Robert.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Well, you got me at a disadvantage. I know you're getting talked to a bunch of.
$280 a month, and then stack a $900 a month truck payment on it, and you take that out off the top, and then don't leave enough meat on it. And this is right here, don't it? You go to work for a guy like. I worked for out of town for, and they told me if I didn't carry workman's comp, that I can work for them. Period. That's it. Go park it. And all of the outfits in town for that way.
Oh, do you mean comments?
Yeah.
Okay.
What a question.
Yes, go ahead.
We heard from previous witnesses about the California drivers coming into Klamath Falls and being in competition with these people. Do any of these people go into Northern California?
We go into Northern California and haul back to Oregon. Or we do not go into California and haul within California.
Not that I know. California into Oregon.
Yeah. We haul from California back to Oregon. They were in an outfit down there trying to get a permit that had 500 trucks. And they were going to come up there and
Now he's going to put Putman and Quadras and my brother and everybody else out of business.
One question I have, where you are hauling in California, you would not be subject to that if the comp laws where you could get a lower rate?
I don't know that.
Let me ask you a question on that, Mr. Reason. If you go in California, are you hauling for a California logger, or are you calling for a Oregon logger who has made a contract in California and had the wrong spot up here?
It's an Oregon-based logger.
Okay, it's a law. Okay.
Yeah, it's usually like, you get down in California and them guys are, they hang together like a month's supplies, you know. You go down there and they run like that. And then the state comes in and I look at this thing like, ah, you know, they put this on me. That's, if I got here, what the state would bring wouldn't make myself think. I couldn't pay a higher deal with what the state was doing. So, I'm 100% sure it is. I want to be able to go get my insurance where I want it. I'll tell you what happened to me. I went and got some insurance when I first bought my truck. It cost me $85 a month. And then I knew it was $15,000 wide. 24-hour coverage, and if I got hurt on the job, it'd give me two-thirds of my gross income on my truck. Now, these guys back here know what you gross is one. I can make more money being hurt through my private insurance.
So that makes a claim to your truck?
I don't know, I can make it myself.
Out of the two-thirds?
Yeah.
What did you say you did? I had a gross income in a month.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Gross. $5,000
a month? My stuff?
Well, average. I don't want to sign anybody.
I don't know what the gross from that north on. How much?
$4,000 a month, then.
Yeah, of course, it's about $4,000.
So, just trying to make the point that, you know, you're not doing it too much. So.
Yeah, you're not. You try things out, Tom. You know, you might get up here and study and talk and joke, you know, talking to you guys. But you guys are busy being back here, and they ain't stupid. You know, they say, by God, you're going to have this amount of insurance, or you ain't going to work. We're going to take your toy away from you. And you take a $7,000 piece of machinery, ain't no toy.
Thank you very much.
Three different smells
As soon as they found out in the office I was hauling there, which usually takes a day or two, I got a letter. You will give us a list of your insurance coverage or you will not haul here. And I have always carried stomp insurance. Well, I'll say for the last 10 years I have carried it. The first time I ran into this, if you don't carry your own, you don't work on this job.
Is that a logger in Lane County?
Yes. In this 30 years, it's all been in Lane County, with oh, with the exception of 3 or 4 months. One winter I went over to John Day. Can say that 30 years has been in the Lane County area. And the thing I would like is if you would please give us the option to run our own business and insure ourselves the way we choose. I'm going to carry it. I'm an amputee. Was hurt on the job. And I know that you got to carry it.
You just want the option to?
Yes, just the option to run our own business and insure the way that we choose. I brought my insurance bill from April here, and for me it's going to be $251.08. I am covered private insurance compensation.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Mr.
Chuck. Yes.
Chuck, who's driving your truck today while you're up here?
It seems like somebody up here in the legislature said that we had to take the day off.
You had to take the day off?
Yes. This is a holiday.
Oh. My goodness, I didn't know that. The logging crews are all working, though. Just the shovel operators and the
Some of them will be soul decking, but... Yeah. Any holiday, we cannot get a logging truck on the road. Highway.
Hmm.
The only truck in Oregon that can't go on the road on Saturday afternoons or Sundays or holidays.
I just wanted to make the point.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a good point. Thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, Chuck. Mr. Leonard Hetler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Leonard Hepworth from Silverton, Oregon, and I'm in favor of this bill as it stands. I do think we need it. And I'm a little concerned about this percentages of ownership to define, make a definition for an owner-operator. Myself, I'm in business with two of my brothers, and when Representative Otto said maybe 50%. Well, I didn't think too much of that because I'm only 33 1/3% at the present time. That wouldn't work for us. So I think it should be something more than 50%. But I do feel it should be equal ownership because if there were two and one was 1/50th, then the man that was the 1/50th, he would be like an employee. It would work out that way. But however, Mr. Frank said it in a court, it wouldn't uphold, so that wouldn't work out either.
How many rigs do you own?
We just run one truck, but we're logging operators mostly.
Yeah.
You have a corporation. Just similar to a partnership. Right on, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'll take a question on being a corporation. Can a corporation, would they be exempt under this?
Officers.
Any person or persons operating as partners?
No, I don't think so.
Well, now that he's incorporated, there'd be no way that he could get out from under this, get out from under state.
Well, I think there's another exemption in the law.
I believe that top five corporate officers are exempt.
Yeah, if you look at the bill, line 28, I think they're picking them up. Your situation. Thank you very much.
Well done, Mr. Chairman. Oh,
go ahead.
You are paying.
No, we're not.
You are not paying.
Not paying.
You, is that the reason that you're exempt? Is 656027 which says that officers of corporations are exempt?
Well, that is the reason. And another reason we don't pay is because we don't go out and use our truck to haul for other people. We haul only our own logs.
That's what I'm
But we have the right to do that. We have a permit to go in several counties, and we have a right to do that, and we may do this. But we are in favor of this bill because we wouldn't have any problem going out and hauling for hire.
Okay. You don't employ anybody else.
No, we
didn't. Just
no.
Three of us.
Right.
And you're all the officers in the corporation.
Right. Right.
Mark.
Thank you very much.
Very smart.
You've got it set up right. Mr. Joe Spooner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Joe Spooner from 15016 Coon Hollow Road, Southeast, State in Oregon. I'm Vice President of Taxpayers Protective Association of Oregon, Incorporated. We've been waiting for a long time to see this type of bill come through the legislature. But people want to stand on their own feet rather than get on the welfare program and stand on the taxpayer's feet. And we're 100% behind this. We hope that you pass it. Very refreshing to see people take the initiative on their private junction and get this kind of action going. And I know that it has been working a hardship on some of these people where they are forced to pay the texture fee when they can get comparable or even better insurance programs and benefits on their own. So we would certainly stand behind the people who are putting this bill through. It's very short, very clear, easy to understand. It's very commendable of these people who come from all over Oregon on the holidays to take this action.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one question for Mr. Senator. What you're actually saying is you would like to see the law exempt any self-employed individual.
Yes.
Mr. Senator, I hope to get to the other bill you signed up for today, and I'm going to try to do that because I know you've come down here to testify on 297. So if we can wait, I'm going to try and reserve about 10 or 15 minutes for you to speak on that bill that you signed up for on that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hugh Fagner.
I'm Hugh Fagner from Boring, Oregon, independent trucker. I don't know what I can add to what everybody else has said here today, other than I'm for it 100%. The state is, in respect, forcing us to insure ourselves twice. Myself, I have two life insurance policies with this new amendment. Clauses, health and accident, 24 hours a day. And yet I have to pay the high cost of the state. And either that or I don't work. So I'm in favor of it 100%. I think we need it very badly.
Thank you. Now, if I am correct and I've gone down the list, better than Mr. French, Mr. McKellar, and Mr. Edwards and Mr. Kennedy, I believe everyone who signed up has had an opportunity to testify. I'm going to ask you, is there anybody that has come from out of town to testify on this bill that has not signed up and would like to come forward and testify? Okay. Bob McCullough, is he here right now? Bob, why don't you come on over? Do you want to bring... Joe Prince? Yeah, Joe Prince. Joe wants to come on up, both of you together. Why don't you both state your names and maybe
My name is Robert McKellar, Executive Secretary of Oregon Log Truckers Association, PO Box 2167, Salem, Oregon 97308.
My name is Joel French. Work for Oregon Log Truckers Association. My address is PO Box 2167, Salem, Oregon.
Go ahead. How do you want to do it? Bob, do you want to speak first and flip you open?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a statement. I had a written statement which we will pass out to the committee. We should have.
We've all read.
Go ahead. Thank you in support of House Bill 2820. The Oregon Log Truckers Association requests that the House Labor Committee send HB 2820 to the floor with a D-pass recommendation. HB 2820 would classify the log truckers, as well as other groups who own and operate equipment for hire, as non-subject workers for the purpose of workman's compensation. This bill would clarify the situation for both the log trucker and the party contract with to supply his services. The courts have been deciding each case on its individual merits, and the status of the log trucker as alternatively been determined to be an independent contractor and an employee. There are a number of reasons OLTA supports HB 2820. First of all, the log trucker considers himself to be a self-employed person, and his status has been recognized by other governmental agencies. Second, after discussing HB 2820 with some workman's compensation carriers, they had no serious objections to the bill. There was general agreement that the problem could be clarified by allowing the log trucker, and again I'm speaking of the owner-operator, the opportunity to make his own decision regarding coverage. Other reasons for supporting HB 2820 is one, if a single operator carries his own insurance, there would be a greater incentive for safety. And I'm talking now of private insurance, not workman's comp. Also, since liability is equally divided under these circumstances, the incentive for safety should be equally shared between the log truckers and the party contracting for his services. Two, as already has been brought out, for unemployment compensation purposes, 657.047, log truckers are specifically excluded from eligibility for unemployment insurance as self-employed persons. In other words, for workman's comp purposes, this owner-operator, by law, is declared to be an employee. However, this same employee cannot go to the unemployment compensation people and say, I'm an employee, I want some unemployment compensation. So he's a split personality, I guess. Three, the IRS has some financial guidelines which determine the independent contractor status, and these requirements may also be applied to the log truck.
Who put the exemption in the law of 657.047? Who lobbied for them? Was that your association?
No, that was passed, I think, 20 or 25 years ago. As I understand it, that was before my time. I think it was mills and loggers. I'm not sure.
They put it in itself.
Yeah. I don't think that, I think, Mr. Chairman, at that time, there were no log truckers associations, and I'm sure that they had very little to do with it.
For those of you, I'm sorry I used the statutory number. I asked the question of who put the exemption from unemployment compensation into the statute. And that's what I was trying to get at. Go ahead.
The IRS on page 2 of an independent contractor is A, owns his own equipment, B, is responsible for the maintenance of this equipment, C, carries the burden of all expenses, repairs, insurance, and personal. D, supplies the necessary services to operate the equipment. E, is compensated on fee-based
on the distance of a haul or the number of deliveries or division of gross revenue. F. Also establishes the details surrounding the performance of the work. 4. The National Labor Relations Board has similarly determined owner-operators to be independent contractors. The NLRB uses the right of control over the means of performing the service as a major factor in establishing independent status. We do have some cases that we'd be glad to supply the committee with. The NLRB spoke of cases in which a owner-operator was leasing his truck and then being paid on a percentage, and the question was, he an employee for...
That's the West Coast case.
It is the...
Houston 57.
Right. No, yes, we have that one, and we have the George transfer case.
Our firm representative. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, we have those cases we'd be glad to supply the committee. 5, court decision previously agreed that the log trucker was an independent. However, now determining factors have been added which further confuse the issue. The right of control has been the main factor until the issue of social welfare legislation was introduced and the nature of the work was re-examined and found to imply an owner or an employer-employee relationship. The legislature felt the statutory defense was sufficient one time, however, the courts do not seem to be able to apply a consistent interpretation. It is for this reason that HB 2820 is needed. The log trucker's status would be clearly defined within the statute, and the necessity of litigating each case would no longer be a burden. And as the committee is probably aware, prior to 1947, the owner-operator log trucker was considered an independent contractor, ran his own business, so on and so on. Then when the Bowser case was decided in 1947, they went in long gyrations about how do you tell the difference between an independent contractor and an employee, and finally they boiled it down to the right of control. Who has the right of control? And that case after that decided that apparently there was a right of control, and they held that the owner-operator log trucker, at least in that case, was an independent contractor.
So could you distinguish between the right to control and actual control?
Well, the right to control, actual control, is where you tell the man, you will do this, you do this, you do that. And I guess the right to control is where it's implied that he has that right.
He never exercised it.
And it's, I guess, something implied in the law. He doesn't have to post it on the bulletin board with a large number of rules, do this, do this, and do this, but it is implied that will be done. Then along came the Butts case, which was a party finishing his own tractor, skidding logs. And in that case, they talked about the Bowser case. We have the right to control this man. And then suddenly they start talking some other factors. Well, the right to control seems to be confusing, so we'll have to go to some secondary test, which means that the parties have the right to terminate the agreement. What was his job? Was he contracting for a certain amount of business? Or was he to do a certain thing every day? And in that case, they held now he's an independent contractor.
Yeah, were they standing the common law test, or is the court looking at the statutory scheme?
Well, I think they were looking at some of the common law tests.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other cases, of course, that were split in other states on, again, what is meant by the right of control. And the right of control is a very... sounds reasonable, sounds easy to define, but I, after reading these cases, it can be very confusing, and the court speaks of right of control must be decided on the facts of each case.
Does the IRS require your independent owner-operators, that they apply the common law test for independent contractor basis, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So what they're doing is that they're being determined to obtain independent contractors as far as the IRS is concerned, and in the work, and for unemployment, they're independent contractors, but for workers' comp, they're being viewed as employees.
That's right.
Dan, go ahead.
Under number one on the first page, one question, the one sentence there raises the question. All pursuit liability is equally divided under these circumstances. The incentives for safety should be equally shared between the log trucker and the party contracting for his services. Are you saying here that there is now a divided liability?
No, I'm saying that that probably there is not a divided liability, but I think that each party is more or less responsible to keep themselves in a safe operation so that the log trucker will be safe and not cause any injury, and the logger who's contracting for certainly should keep his operation up to snuff and not cause any injury.
Well, then that sentence misleading in that respect.
Well, if you want to put it in that vein, I guess you could say that statement.
Mr. Friend, what do you mean by a single operator? An operator of one?
A single operator is a party who owns his own truck, drives his own truck, and operates his own truck, and usually repairs his own truck, and does everything in that vein. That's his own business, and in some respects, I guess you'd call him a sole proprietor, although there is an exemption in the workman's compensation law that says sole proprietor is exempt. So the question has been asked, if you are a log truck owner-operator, why aren't you a sole proprietor? What does that word mean? Well, the law is founded on technicalities, I guess, and it gets more technical in the workman's compensation law. And a sole proprietor, as I gather it, in that exemption in the workman's compensation statute would mean where you have a business with some employee. And really, if you had a business by yourself, and of course in the log trucking field, where you're an owner-operator and you're a sole proprietor, it doesn't mean what it says. So you, by court decision, you are still considered an employee.
Here's what baffles me in your statement. If a single operator carries his own insurance, there must be a greater incentive for safety. What does that mean?
Well, I think, first of all, if he is carrying, let's assume that the logger is carrying the insurance and paying the workman's compensation insurance. One of them must carry it now,
yeah,
according to the law. Then I would think that the party who is working for the logger, and if the logger is carrying the insurance, may not have the same incentive for safety. And I think more important that we're talking about people who have their own business. This is their own livelihood, and they are independent businessmen, and they certainly have a greater feeling that they are the breadwinner in the family, that they want to be safe. They want to. They work on their own equipment, and they want it in a safe condition. And it is not like a true employee who will drive a truck that he's never worked on, or maybe change his truck, not familiar with it. And what we're saying is that if this bill passes, we think that the owner-operator would conduct himself in a safe manner because he knows that he is a breadwinner of the family. And as I say, knows his operation better than anybody else.
Okay?
Yes,
Representative Williams.
The question was asked earlier, if this bill is passed, just the way it is, whether or not an owner-operator would have the option. And I think the answer was given that the owner-operator would not have the option.
No, that's incorrect. If the bill passes, under ORS 656-140, he would still have an option to cover himself, even though he has been excluded out as a workman.
Right.
And that way, he could go to a party who wants to hire him and say, under the law that was passed, I am not a workman, so you do not have to worry about paying back premiums on me. I'm a true independent contractor. The law is clarified, and I don't want to carry any workman's comp. And the logger party hiring him is fine with me. Or they could negotiate, and the man, if he wanted to carry his own, could carry it without any liability on the part of the logger being involved.
So, just said before you get on, the question that was asked is whether the employees, the owner-operator is going to have an option under the statute. Now, under the statute of the employer, he has no option, because the bill expressly excludes him from the definition of covered employer, employment. Now, what you do, though, is you pick up in 656-140, you pick up an option for him. It's an option.
Okay, right.
That's right. So he is excluded from the law,
okay.
but he does have, in his 140, the opportunity, if he wants to be covered himself,
right. Okay.
To come back in. And that's what the question is Representative Wilkins asked earlier, and
right.
I responded to.
Yeah, but he would have an option to cover himself. He wouldn't be out in the cold with
it. It wouldn't be an option if, in fact, he was would not be a subject employer.
Okay.
A subject working, excuse me.
Right. So I don't think, maybe we're talking language.
It's semantics, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's how lawyers talk, I guess. No one understands it, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But under 650,
I couldn't make a living if they did.
I'm sorry,
go ahead.
But under 656-140, and again, regardless of what you would call this person, if there's any person who operates this equipment and furnishes it, would be in a position to cover himself, even though he's excluded out as a workman under the workman's compensation law. Now, where this thing again boiled over was last year in 1975. We had the exact case, after all this Bowser case, which totally decided the law that an owner-operator is an employee for workman's compensation purposes. Then we have the Betts case, which throws some doubts into that, even though it wasn't an owner-operator. Then we have the IRS decision saying that apparently this type of person is an independent contractor. We have these National Labor Relations cases which say apparently he is an independent contractor. Then we have the Woody versus Wilder case that was decided by the Court of Appeals. And in that case, we get back again and it says, well, this question is decided on the right of control. And then it says the right of control was not sufficient. So we only have to use the secondary test, which do they have the right to terminate the contract? Did the injured workman determine his own hours of employment? There's about 9 or 10 tests. And then we get down to the magic words that says each case must be determined on its own facts as to whether this man is an independent contractor or whether he is an employee. The case was appealed to the Supreme Court, and Justice O'Connor wrote an opinion in which he talks of the right of control, talks of each individual case, and then he goes through that apparently the person was a workman because he was an integral part of the whole operation. But again, it is our contention that really doesn't solve this problem, because in this language of the Woody Wilder case, the final decision, they talked about that this log trucker goes to work for the same logger year in and year out. All right, my question is, and you've heard today, what happens when these people change loggers, or they change jobs during the season? What would happen to the Woody Wilder case If again, this was litigated with a different set of facts, I'm not sure we have the matter settled yet. And we feel that this bill would definitely settle the matter. It would give strong guidelines as to what an independent contractor is or what a employee is for workers' compensation purposes. And then based on that, it does not exclude the owner-operator log trucker. If he so desires coverage, he still has the option to do it, but he isn't forced to take it, as he is now under this peculiar flux of the law, which is very confusing. And again, pointing out the unemployment compensation law, he is not an employee, but under working comp, he is an employee. The public, he doesn't really know what he is. And from all practical purposes, the industry considers themselves independent contractors. And I think we should listen to the will of the industry. We feel the court decision is still clouded, is not a proper definition of the term, and that the legislature should set the policy of what a person is, and we think that this bill would so do it.
So let me talk to you very briefly, because I'm going to bring Chuck Gillen here now, and I want to talk to him for a while. I'm just going to speak as one individual. I think the bill was, I know where you picked up the language out of 656.140, and I personally believe it's much too broad if you want to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. I happen to believe that there's more with your people, and I'm willing to see that we get something on that. The way the bill's drafted, I think if you're picking up so many different...
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we were solving your problem, you'd have no objection to leaving everything but the law.
Okay. Now, my next question is, I want you to look at the unemployment under 657.047. Look into that statute and see if we could pick up an exemption
using that same language.
Using that procedure rather than the way you're going about it. I am talking to you both for just how I see it personally and also politically. And I think Bob knows what I'm talking about, that you've just got an awful, awful large number of people. I was trying to figure out why Jeff Kalinowski was sitting through this whole hearing, and now I understand. That's the only bill. And I just don't think that...
He came here to testify on our side if we needed it.
Oh, I know. He's good. That's the only bill. Because it's 2 years ago, I mean, what you testify on behalf of this. But I'm just saying that look at him in that way, and I'm willing to do that.
You alluded to the fact that you had a problem earlier this year where we had 500 drivers that were somebody who owned 500 trucks that were coming from California, or one of the other people did. You know what the contractors the state of Oregon has with the states of Idaho, Washington, and California that allows people to do business with their coverage?
I don't know. Mr. Gillen probably can answer. It's my understanding that if you have workman's comp in Oregon and you go to California, and I'm not sure that if you go to California and come back to Oregon, you can use your Oregon workman's comp. I'm not sure if you become a permanent resident of California, whether then you can say, well, I know you couldn't, but I know of a couple cases of where a logger had gone down to California for 6 months with the understanding he's coming back to Oregon, and I think he can still use his Oregon compensation, although I guess Mr. Gary would be better to answer that than me.
Would you be in favor of a California logger that had to come up here, that had to pay your rates rather than their own?
We wouldn't be in favor of any California logger coming up here, long trucker.
The question, as I recall it, had to do with whether or not
the assumed wage was going to raise to $15,600. The assumed wage a year ago was 10-4, and the, I'm going to get the name of this organization right, but it's the Northwest Compensation
Bureau.
It's a committee of the Bureau who meets and sets this assumed wage. And we appeared before that committee just a year ago in June, and presented them with rather substantial statistics indicating that the $10,400 or the $15,600 assumed wage didn't make any sense at all. They were kind enough to not increase with respect to the log trucking industry. They assumed wage to $15,600. They left it at 10-4. So this year, the year that we're in right now, the assumed wage for log truckers is $10,400, on which they pay their workman's comp. Everybody else in that category is $15,600. This committee meets, I think, the 28th or 29th of June, and they'll address this question again. And we have no confidence that they're going to allow us to stay at $10,400. So the impact is doubly important here, since we're talking about $33.13 per hundred based on 10-4 now, which is the figures you heard today. And most likely, July 1, it'll be $15,600.
I believe that drives the cost up about $2,200 a year for the average owner-operator.
That's correct.
That is the calculation based on what information you see.
Yeah.
The authority for doing it, you're talking about it, is ORS 656-1473, I believe, where it says the firm shall, or the other insurer, may accept such application and fix the classification and an assumed monthly wage at which such person or persons operating as partners shall be paid on material as written certificate of computation of the check. But is that the one?
I believe so, yes. Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
I just want I was talking this gentleman, Bernie Johnson from Klamath Falls, is out in the hallway, and he brought up the point that in his first job there was confusion about this thing, and the mill was going to hold out 25% of his first 2 weeks of check to cover his workman's comp because he didn't have his own coverage. Now, when you talk about the assumed wage, that's for the logger who covers himself. That's it. Now, if the mill covers him, it's based on the gross pay for the hauler, which is considerably different from the net. Okay, I just wanted to see, how about on the other end, the logger? If the logger is covering the guy, what basis is used there?
What he pays him.
Actual pay. So whether it's the logger or the mill, it's based on the gross. And so it's to the advantage again of the logger under the current law to have to cover himself because it costs less.
Well,
I mean the log truck, the owner operator, to his advantage to cover himself. Under the present law.
Yes, that's kind of right. It costs less to pay more.
Right.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Gill, would you like to come up for a minute, please?
Mr. Chairman, while he's getting in place, I'd like to make a statement here. I'd like for us to get some action on this bill as quickly as possible because this is a House bill. They're trying to get wound down, and I'm concerned about this bill getting caught in the crunch between the two houses. So,
Representative Rogers, this bill will be set for hearing. This assumes all the other bills that we have in the committee, and it is going to be considered, and I will set the agenda and pull it out at that time.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, you know, we've been talking about what the premiums are a year.
muck and just jog my memory a little bit. We've had testimony here before that the rates were going to go up again. That they possibly could go up as much as 25% or more. And just for the record, the guy said that the average they're appearing here now is about $2,800. If they get really raised to 15.6 and the premiums go up 25%, they will be paying, on the average, $6,250 a year in workman's compensation premiums. Just for the record. And if somebody like Chuck or somebody can put those figures down, I'd love to hear it because I don't like them very well.
Yeah, my name.
Oh, go ahead, Chuck.
My name is Chuck Gill. I'm manager of the state accident insurance fund. I've got our counsel here with us, Mr. Keith Maloney.
Okay, Chuck, that's as far as usual. Bill, would you ask Mr. Gary the questions you previously asked before we get started? Anita has it down here. Did you ask a question?
Is there one that I just asked?
No, the one that you earlier had asked concerning, independent.
He wanted to know if independent log haulers, excuse me, if loggers that hire individuals have to cover.
Okay. Well, let me restate the question. If there's an independent owner-operator who has two trucks and he hires someone else to operate one of them on a continuing basis, then does he have to cover himself when he is driving?
No, he does not. Okay. He is then an employer under the law.
Right. That was my understanding. Apparently, there's some misunderstanding amongst the mills and the logging firms about it.
There is a concern by the prime contractor, the mill owner, even though you might own a truck, they would just assume you probably elect coverage for yourself, even though you have another truck, another employer. Just in case that an accident would occur and they would claim they'd be an employee. But the law says if you're an employer, that you're not a subject workman, and they are employers.
Now, that individual in that instance, though, can elect to cover himself.
Yes, he can.
Or workman's comp.
Yes.
Or elect not.
Yes.
Here he can have either option.
Yes.
Chuck, would you agree to testimony solely to the owner-operator of the log truck company? Because I think the bill, as we've recognized, is much broader, but the only one I want to sit around in on is the log truck.
The language of the bill is the exact language of 140. It's lifted from 140, and while it does affect some of those others, not to the extent it does the independent owner-operator of log truck. When the law passed in 65, it was felt that they were employers in the normal sense of the word as we consider independent operators. But they didn't employ anybody. And it came about very shortly after a few cases were filed where an independent operator was hurt. That the court said that he is not an employer, he's a workman of who he's hiring for. And so then they found out in order to continue to operate, they had to have some kind of coverage to protect that contractor they were hiring for, and there was no way for them to get into the law. They weren't an employer. Employers can elect coverage, but they weren't employers. So they were in a dilemma for some time, and Safe provided coverage for them, and asked them to go hire somebody temporarily, and we'd bring them in, and we'd cover them until the legislature met, and we passed 140. And 140 allowed them to provide coverage for themselves, because that's the only way they could get a job. The contractors would not hire them unless they saw that they had the protection by the independent contractor electing coverage for himself.
time went on, of course, the cost of the insurance continued to rise, and it is continuing to rise now. And so they're paying a great deal, but they are of unusual breed. They find themselves, like a lot of employers, owning as much equipment or having as much invested, but not being recognized in the same fashion as other employers, not having the freedom to make a choice. In order to just run a business, they are forced into saying that they're working to provide coverage for themselves because of their unique situation. There is a consideration that maybe they should have that same right, and this section of this law that was drafted allows them to do that. Now, what the relationship will be between them and who they hire from after this remains to be seen. They might still be asked to provide coverage. The law should look at them, however, that they are non-subject workmen if this bill passes.
Chuck, let me stop you there. What you're saying is that there's another section of the law, other than this section, that you're going to be looking at them under as far as their status. Do I understand that correctly?
No, I think this would just say that they're not subject workmen.
But if they hired another employee to drive another,
they would automatically be an employer.
Okay. And so they would be exempt, but their employee is covered.
Right. But they would not be able to be sued, I would imagine, against either hiring another logger as a workman, because the law says they're not a workman. So the only action they would have would be the normal action of one employer against another employer or some liability suit if that might occur, but not under the workman's comp law. That point, Mr. Gilmore, the other thing is extremely important, I believe, that they cannot, if in fact we can set them out as an independent company, they cannot, no entire suit, that they're stronger than whoever they're doing business for.
Well, he didn't say
well,
that.
It's not what he's saying.
He said the very opposite. He said that they came to him.
Today. Well, he said if they passed this bill, whatever it was, they would not be able to. Is that what you said, Mr. Gill? I'll have my counsel clarified.
He's going to let them know. If the bill passed and the independent owner operator is going to be considered an independent contractor, he would still have his common law rights to pursue a damage remedy claim against the logger if he was injured on the logger's premises and with the logger's negligence. He invokes his common law rights.
Or if he's negligent,
yes.
But not as a workman. That's right. Yeah. Under the workman's comp law.
Would he still be entitled, the independent operator still be entitled to the remedy under the OSHA as far as safety? If there's a violation of some safety standard or something like that?
He certainly would be subject to the OSHA law.
As far as being able to, we have the red tag provision, we also have another bill on this committee.
Doubt that he would have that remedy. That's embodied in the workman's compensation law and is a remedy for employees. And he's now not an employee under the workman's compensation law.
It would be strictly a common law right.
Right. Yes.
Okay, Chuck, go ahead.
I heard several points brought up. The cost of the insurance is certainly not minimal at all, especially if you're a small operator. The costs are you have to pay $200 or $300 a month. That's a lot for insurance premiums if you're just an individual operator. If you're working for somebody else and covered
on their payroll, using the relationship there, and that was brought out before, is about 25% of the cost is applied as payroll, and the other part of that cost is considered the hire of the equipment. So 25% of that is usually paid for premium purposes. The assumed wage is an application that is used by all insurance carriers and through the regulations of the National Council to their local rating bureau, and apply to all corporate officers and the partners and individual owners who elect coverage. It's a basis by which to establish a premium. And it is true, there is consideration of that going up to an assumed wage of 10.4 to 15.6, which would be a substantial increase, you're correct, based upon the classification assigned. So it would be a substantial increase from the assumed wage of 10,400 to 15,600, you're paying $32 a hundred. It's just a simple matter of mathematics to indicate that there would be an even greater burden upon these group of employers or individual or independent contractors who then would be forced to provide the coverage. One point I think that could be made out, I think most other independent contractors or employers in the state do have the right to select whatever kind of coverage they want, private or otherwise, and usually to the degree of the individual provide adequate or coverage if they want. But I think I need to point out that the difference in the cost is really the difference in the benefits that are provided by the contract of insurance. And the reason that the cost of workman's compensation insurance is so much greater is that the benefits are so much greater. And while they look the same, there are limits to the liability usually on the private policy, not unusual. There are no limits, as you know, on workman's compensation. And no limits on medical, or no limits on time off, no limits on permanent disability that paid for life. And that's a very substantial difference of the cost between the two different insurances.
Chuck, there was a cost statement you made earlier, and you talked about the 65 law, three-way system when it came in. And Mr. French talked about the Bowser case in 47. Prior to 65, and specifically in 47 of the SIA, what was the law on the independent owner-operators for the law truck industry?
We had a section of the law referred to as 124, 656-124. It was taken out of the law at that time and allowed the log hauler or the independent contractor to enter into a formal agreement of the status of the individual at that time. Mr. Morley dealt with that a great deal and might be able to explain it in a little bit more detail.
Yes, the two parties could get together and sign a statement that the services were going to be performed as an independent contractor. And if that statement was signed and filed with the board, then the person received an injury, he indicated he was an independent contractor. Why?
Is there any statutory criteria as far as determining independent owner-operators?
There was some, or very little, that talked about it, that the safety were for the performance of labor only. It's been a long time since I read that statute, but
let me ask you, in 47, the Bowser case came down, I've read that case some time ago, and I just can't recall it. Was that decided upon the common law scheme, or was it a statutory scheme?
No,
it was based on a broader social policy to restrict who independent owner operators are.
That was decided strictly on the common law standards between a master and servant, what constitutes a master and servant relationship.
Would it be your testimony that there is not a problem so much today with the statutory scheme as it's presently written, other than the fact that the
falling into the ambit of the law, but it's rather a, we're going to need a statute to reverse the common law definition?
Well, definitely, I think the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, has made it very clear in the two most recent cases, Libby v. Libo and Atwood's case, that independent owner-operator of a log truck is an employee.
Under the common law definition?
In Oregon for workers' compensation purposes.
So, do you have any statistics on the accident rate of owner-operators?
The owner-operators are filling in, of course, with all of their log haulers in that classification. Also are filling in with all of their loggers. So they're in a situation where the information that we might have would be for the classification that embodies a lot of other activity besides just log hauling. With that rate, $32 indicates there's a great deal of losses in that particular classification. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it's log haulers. It's probably primarily in the logging area.
Okay, I should have asked another question first. How many owner operators do you anticipate there are in the state that if this bill was passed or some version of it, that would be exempt from the definition of subject workmen?
Or 500, 600,
something like that.
Probably about 700.
Okay, now, I guess since I now have that figure, I'm trying to find the percentage of those that have had accidents, and if you can give me any kind of an estimate.
I can't. I will say this is probably a very small percentage. A very small percentage.
This is German, by the way. Go ahead, sir. Why don't you come up here and sit down right next to him? And then Jeff, why don't you put your name on there so I can find out where it's at on the tape? You don't mind doing so?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'd like to ask this gentleman how they can.
Could you put your name again, please?
I'm Bernie Johnson from Final Falls. I'd like to ask this gentleman how they can take and come up with an estimate on the accidents that are brought in on a job, which is just an everyday working job, where with World War II, there was only 10 to 15% of the people that was involved in an active war that come home. There was only 10 or 15% of them that do come home with limbs or alive. The other 85 or 95% of them came home in good condition. How can they take and classify an everyday working job with a World War II?
I think you're saying, why in the world are we charging so much for
that's
how I was going to phrase it to you. As I indicated before, the rate is based on a method of estimating the amount of payroll and the losses within a particular activity of work. And in this activity of work, there's a great amount of losses. Now, as I indicated before, it not only includes log hauling, but it includes logging itself.
Do you understand that, what he just said?
Yeah.
That is, I think, the critical factor in which you're concerned about is to review your particular job.
What I just don't understand how working man's job was when the government papers showing that in an all-out war, there was only 10 to 15% of people that didn't get to come back to the United States. And, I mean, that's more of a
critical
than going out and working on
an
everyday job.
Yeah, I understand. I'm looking for all the things out there. Go ahead.
A twofold question. One, do other states break out the log truckers from the general logging rate? And if so, what's the correlation there? And secondly, do you have an opinion if, in fact, the log truckers of Oregon were out of it, what the rate might be?
Some states do break it out, and some of them do not. Generally, they do not. It's thrown in. Log hauling years ago was broken out in Oregon a few years ago, and the rate was higher than logging. I might point out, however, at that particular time, the logging roads and the dumps and everything were not as good as they are today, nor were the roads as good as they are today. And when they had an accident, it was a very severe one, usually. So if you broke it out today, and that has been suggested in the last number of years, that they make applications to consider doing that, and that has to be made by their organization, and they can do it through the National Council. They could break it out, but if they did break it out, they would live with whatever that rate would be. And that still can take place. It takes a couple years to gather the information to establish the rate. If I had to guess, it would probably be lower today if it was separated out.
No.
Also,
what rate? The general logging rate, or the as I interpret Bill's question, if there were a separate classification for independent owner operators and they were covered under the workman's comp law, what would their rate be?
Well, it would be more. It would be all log hauling would be separated out, not only independent owner, but all log hauling would be separated out from the actual logging show operation. And if I had a guess to make, I would suggest that log hauling rate would probably be lower. Also, if that would be the case, probably the logging rate would be higher.
One subsidizing the other.
Right. And if it would be the other way, it would just affect them the other way.
Have you seen the Senate Bill 625? It's this newspaper thing.
Yeah.
And you've seen the trend that they put forth in that bill. Do you see a problem with that at all? For those of you who do not have it, what they've done, as I stated earlier, they've got the same area of the law that you're concerned about, and they just have a general section in here that says a newspaper carrier utilizing compliance with the provisions of Section 3 or 4 of this 77 Act are not subject workmen. And then in Section 4 it says an individual qualifies for the exemption saying he's a non-subject workman if he, in essence, provides the following benefits. It's a medical and health benefit for the individual. And what it says, the part that I'm interested in, is that it says that $250,000 unallocated hospital and medical benefits, $10 per week off time benefits for a period of 52 weeks, and a $5,000 accidental death and dismemberment benefit. And my question to Mr. Gill is, what does he think about that fee? And what that is they would say if you're not a subject workman, if you have a private policy that would provide those benefits. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I have a difficult time putting the newspaper carriers with the log on it.
So I mean, this is the concept.
The concept, leaving the newspaper people aside, the way I feel, if you want to know how I feel that log haulers are businessmen, independent operators, just like a guy owning a store down here, or just like a guy that is in business any place, and I would hate to prescribe that he has to have any level of insurance. If you do it for the log haulers, then I would suggest that maybe you should consider doing it for every other independent contractor.
it's just a feeling that I have.
Chuck, we're going to go on a question. Are you in support, would you be in support of a bill that would exempt the independent owner-operator log truck driver from the definition of non-subject working?
Yes, I would.
That's what I need. Thank you very much.
Is that your personal position or is that the position of the state?
Well, that's my personal position, and I'd like to point out that SAFE has tried to act as a, it's forgotten now, but SAFE has tried to provide the coverage when it was needed years ago. And you read the law, you say, it says SAFE, the shell, and carriers may. For a long time, you know, we did that to provide an opportunity for them to work. It was never, we never did set the rates, nor did we try to force them under but provide the risk. I've always felt they were businessmen, and but they had to work, and we tried to provide a way for them to do that. The rates have gone up, and it's a difficult situation today.
Thank you, Chuck. For those of you who travel a great distance on Memorial Day, the session starts at 10:30 up on the floor. I'm going to speak for the rest of the committee. We're highly appreciative of you people coming up on the holiday to come up here and to testify on behalf of this bill. You've probably detected a feeling that the committee has, and I think I can say also, that at least for a majority of the members, that it appears to me that they are interested in finding a way to exempt the independent owner-operator log truck driver. The present bill is much broader than that. And I think that for a number of reasons, both political and some practical, that the bill and Mr. French and Mr. McKellar have it will supply the committee with an amendment to try and restrict it to you particular people solely and not other independent contractors in the state. Again, I thank you for losing your Memorial Day holiday, and I'm sure that it's going to have an impact on the committee when they consider this legislation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Any of them that haven't had enough are welcome to come up and watch us operate on the floor if they can handle it.
Before I leave, there were three bills up. Mr. Spinner didn't get a chance to testify again. I will set those up for hearing within the next 2 days that were on the agenda today and that we did not get to. Anything else to come before the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned.